Welcome back to another episode of Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler. On this podcast, we explore all things related to thriving and flourishing in life. There are three fundamental truths that inform not just my podcast, but my coaching as well. And they are, number one, the future can be changed. You are not stuck and you are not trapped by your predictable future. Wherever you are right now, it's just your present state. It does not determine where you can go in life. Fundamental truth number two, you can change your future. This might be the best news of all. You don't need to be rescued by someone else. You can do that for yourself. In other words, you can be your own hero. And fundamental truth number three, you do not have to wait. Too many people think that they have to have the perfect plan or all the knowledge or all the skills before they can get started. Nothing is further from the truth. I've coached a lot of people in my career. And trust me when I say that you can learn whatever it is that you need to learn along the way. The key is to start. If you've listened to the podcast before, you'll probably know that we find stories and experts who shed light on these different areas so that we can all flourish and thrive. Let's dive in to today's episode. My guest today has faced that pivotal question of, what do you do when more money, a bigger office, and a bigger title doesn't make you happy? In fact, it was worse than that. In her own words, she said, "It's not that I don't want to be in this job. It's that this job is making me not want to be in this life." I know that many of us can probably relate to that. In this episode, Debbie Cruz shares how she faced this crossroads, what she learned, and how she's helping others on their path to their dreams. Hey, Debbie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Bobby, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of fascinated by your story a little bit and what you do now. So, I don't want to jump ahead. I'm just going to say, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your backstory?
Sure. I am a dream pollinator, and I know that that sounds like fascinating to a lot of people, which I'm excited about. I took it from a variation of a few things. I believe in having a dream in your heart. I believe you were uniquely made for a reason. And I got really sick of watching my dreams sit on the shelf. So learning more about my journey and who I am and leaving corporate America, which I guess I'll talk about in a few moments, I learned that my name is originated from Hebrew, Devorah, and it's the bee seeker. And she's actually in the Bible about leading into war and fighting and winning. And it was all about just listening to what was around her and seeking and finding the truth and wanting the best for everybody around her. So that is something that I loved and enjoyed at all of my jobs, was being able to look at people and to see their true potential and see if they were in it or they were not. And I really enjoyed in all of my jobs being able to come into a department or my own department and just look at what was working and what wasn't working. I have a pretty analytical background, but looking at the individual people and the people that were thriving and the people that were not. And the people that were not, I wanted to know why. And a lot of it is learning that they weren't given the right skills or tools that they needed to do their job. They were miserable because they were in the wrong job and they didn't flourish because it's like, this isn't what I want to do. I don't like this. This job's mundane, but I need a check. And when I really dug in deep to the people that were about to lose their job, I realized there was more we can do for them and not fail them. You know, everybody has their own opportunity. It's free will. But if I could do some sort of way to put people in the right places, guide them, give them the right tools that they needed, they would get to the next level. So I started a leadership program at one of my jobs, and I took 25 people that were in that position of getting fired. And it was like, I would feel guilty if they got fired because it was the corporate's problem. You know, we really were failing them. And I'm like, I can't watch this happen anymore. So my team and I, we took these 25 people. And I'm like, you have 1 year. I want you to get to your next level, not like the progression of you start here, you become a supervisor, you become a manager. No, I want you to be what your next level is, and I want to help find it. And so I assign people to the team that were right to position people in the right places, worked one-on-one with them, gave them the tools that they needed. And I think it was about 9 months that all 25 of them had already got to their next place that made them thrive. And yeah, it was amazing. And I realized that that was one of my talents that I enjoyed and loved, and it made everybody happy. So there was my VC geek. It brought production levels up. It brought our clients to want to learn more, want to know more, want to hire us for more jobs within their corporation. It was just flourishing for everybody. So, you know, I just kept taking another group. I ended up moving to another corporation and I saw the same problem, but it was a completely different industry, different philosophy, different dynamics for sure. And I noticed the same thing was happening. And I'm like, we have to change this culture right away. I walked in where the company was breeding that the employees were in control. And it was very much like, well, what can you give for me to show up to work today? What can you give for me to perform? It was a very ugly dynamic. And I don't think it was built to be that way. I think it just grew itself into that place. And then they were in a hole and they didn't know how to get out. So changing the philosophy was getting all the employees that wanted to make an investment to make an investment. So it was sitting with all these employees of what is it that it means for you to work here? What is it that it means for you to show up every day? And it wasn't the parades and the free lunches and all of that stuff that people think motivate people to work. It was the pride that they had for what they did, the skill for what they did, for helping people. It was helping people every day. It was keeping people away from illness. And they prided themselves on that. And they wanted to be part of decisions. And it was like, you should be part of the decisions. You do this every day. I don't do this every day. And getting them involved and again, promoting people to what was the right jobs for them. Their knowledge base shouldn't be wasted on just sitting in an office by yourself and not working with patients and not being innovative. Your job should be somewhere where you're in an innovation spot and building the business and showing us what works and what doesn't work on the floor. So taking it and just taking it to a new level, I realized in under 4 years, I promoted over 550 people. So that made me excited. But for myself, I realized I was on a path that was exactly the same cycle of those people that were at that level of getting fired, because I was always in a job that I wasn't happy. I was told more money, a bigger title was going to give me satisfaction, and I had none of it. And I worked my way to a C-level job thinking like, well, the top has got to be the best place.
That's right.
That's where it is because there's extra dollars there. And it was nothing but for me felt like a prison. And I knew that if I had stayed, I was like, I think I have 6 months. I think in 6 months I will be dead if I stay here and I do this.
Oh my God.
I was distracting myself. There was other factors of being in an unsafe environment, which there wasn't the hugest fear, but at the same time, it wasn't always the safest environment. And I knew my self-destruction was going to be deeper than anything else. I was just trying to look at every avenue of how bad it could get. And I, you know, do believe in God and I do have strong faith, but I also was looking at myself of I was two different people. I was going to a job that was making me sick every day. And there was decisions that I thought were for the greater good. And then I'd be overturned because, you know, it wasn't the popular choice because, you know, dollar signs won over what was right for the people. And that I couldn't live with. And that wasn't just one corporation. That was multiple corporations. It wasn't pinpointed to one place. And I just was like, this is not who I am. I can't be hurting people 5 days a week, bringing my job home and then, you know, going to church and pretending like I'm this holy roller, which I don't believe in either, but I feel like I'm just not living my true purpose. I'm living my life as two separate people and it's making me sick.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was just going to be destruction. So I asked God, I was like, what am I doing? What am I doing here? Why is this part of my life? And I think there was definitely lessons to learn of what was important, what wasn't. And I think chasing dollar signs was a huge piece of it. It wasn't about chasing dollar signs. It was about finding where the joy was in the job. And it was working with the individuals. It was seeing through people of their true potential and getting them there, having that avenue to be able to get people there. And that was more important. So God just said, I want you to leave and I'll take care of everything and just start writing. So I had ignored God so many times. And I'm like, well, I think I'm going to be dead in 6 months. So either way, I really don't see the harm in listening and walking away, because it's either I walk away and have a chance at life, or I stay and I don't. And it, yeah. Either way, I can't bring the dollars with me, and they're not making me happy in any way, shape, or form. They're making my life more miserable. So I did. I left. The world thought I was crazy. Some still are angry at me and are, you know, think I'm crazy for doing that. But I'm still here, and I'm still smiling, and I'm doing everything I can to help people not have to feel that they're in that trap, and yeah. not feel that they have to be stuck to a dollar sign, and not feel that their employers don't take care of them. And to know that you have that dream, it's not to be upset, to be able to really listen to what's in your heart and follow it and believe in it and know that you, it's yours. It's yours for a reason, and you can make it happen. And it's not just a career. I think the career is the best place to start to notice what is working in your life and what's not. And, you know, when you're daydreaming at your job of, well, if I worked here, or if I had this, or if I had money, then I'd be in the greatest relationship. Oh, then I'd be in the best shape. And it's like, no.
No, that's not how it works. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Because there's so much there, you know, and Debbie, some of the things you said, like, feeling like if I stay here, I'll be dead in 6 months. I mean, that's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's important to say it, because I think people feel that way and feel like, oh, no.
And that brings up a question I wanted to ask you. You said you felt like you were living two lives, kind of. Mm-hmm. So I totally get that. What were some of the warning signs?
I mean, I wasn't sleeping at all. I definitely was having that extra glass of wine that turned into two extra glasses of wine at night. And that wasn't helping at all. Just eating destructively, being mad at everybody and everything in my life, pushing people away, pushing relationships away, you know, not feeling bad if I got into a car accident on my way to work or on my way home, or, you know, those things, when you see those signs of like, it's not that I don't want to be in this job. It's like, this job has pushed me to not want to be in this life.
Yeah.
And knowing like, I wasn't brought here to do this.
That's right.
That was the avenue that I thankfully found. And I think people don't see, because you can drown in the, well, what else? What else could be drowning? What else can I do to drown myself? What else can I do to fall asleep and never wake up? And those items are, well, this isn't me. This isn't who I want to be. This isn't who I like. I don't even like what I look like in the mirror.
Yeah.
And you just become this ugly person that you don't realize. And once you learn how to really read energy and read the difference between being super positive and super negative, the negative is the easy breeder. You could fall into that. And we all have those few friends that are like, I have to bring one negative thing about myself to the table. You know, like, oh my God, I know I need new highlights. Oh my God, don't look at my hair. Oh my God, don't look at me. I had 4 donuts yesterday. I could see all over my waist. You know, like everybody has to bring that negativity to the table. And like that, you know, it breeds. Yeah.
I think what you were saying about the, like when you said, oh, I didn't care if I was in an accident on the way to work or something, that took me back to the 90s. I worked at a law firm in Chicago, and it's so easy for us to ignore the signs, right? And this was like early 90s. And I worked at this law firm. It was a very, very tiny law firm. And it had a very hostile environment sometimes. There was one or two of my coworkers, like they thought nothing about screaming and yelling. And it was just like, we're all on pins and needles. And I remember one day I was walking through the loop from the train station to my job, and I was crossing the light, and I had the light, and a taxi cab decided to run the red light. And I'm in the middle of the intersection, and the cab runs the light, and he hits the back of my trench coat. I mean, that's how close it was, the back of my trench coat. And my first thought was, damn, had he hit me, I wouldn't have to go to work today. Yep. I took two more steps and I said, you're getting your butt out of there. You're going to start sending out your resumes today. And within a week, I had a new job because I'm like, wait a minute, I'm saying being hit by a cab, which would have broken bones at the very least, if not outright killed me. I'm saying that's the better alternative. What is that? Like, oh, life is too short. Life is way too short for this. And you're right when you said that the negative is the easy breeder. It's so easy for us to get caught in that trap. And it takes intention to get out of it. It's not just positive thinking. It's deeper than that, you know, and I think sometimes we dismiss that. So now, are you a certified dream coach? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So I did, even though I have been doing it on my own and I still am on my own. I thought it would be a great idea to get certified. And one of my clients actually, when we finished with our session, he's like, you know, you are exactly like, so this gentleman, Matthew Kelly, who the certification is through, he's a well-known Catholic speaker and he runs this program called the Dream Manager Program. Mm. He's like, oh, you know, you are just like Matthew Kelly and, you know, you should look into it. And I ended up reaching out to them and they're like, oh, now we would love for you to join and become a certified coach with us. So, so wow. I did. Yeah. So it's a slightly different than what my Dream Pollination Program is because I wanted my Dream Pollination Program. I wanted to stay deep into what I was doing at corporations and working on one-on-one. The Dream Manager Program is a one-on-one program. It is geared at corporations. It is geared to be at corporations with a straight 12-month program. So I would definitely do a hybrid of both, but you know, stay true to the Dream Manager Program for being in corporations because it really does work. And that's really how I started without knowing that we were doing the same thing. So yeah, it's a great program and it really does focus on the importance of, yes, you have a dream that, and it's getting you ready for that dream. So it's making sure that your health is in the right place because you need to be healthy.
That's right. No matter
what, you need to stay healthy. Your intellect is in the right place. Your finances are in the right place. You're spiritually connected and that you're really focusing on your goals and where you need to be. I dig in a bit deeper, either direction, whichever program I'm working on, to make sure that you have resources that are necessary, you know, but making sure that you are the best version of yourself to get to. So when your dream is closer or there, you're ready. You know, how many times have we come to our dream and dismissed it? Cause it's like, oh, go on a trip to climb Kilimanjaro. Oh, I can't, I'm not in good shape. So I have to say no.
Yeah.
Oh, go buy this dream house that I've been passing by for the past 20 years. And I've always wanted to live here. And now it's for sale. Oh, I can't buy it because I don't have the money because I didn't save anything. To be able to put yourself in those places. And the more you're focused on it, the closer it gets. And the more you give it gratitude and all the positivity to it. I have a client that her dream is this vacation home that her family had grown up, but they never had their own home. They were always staying with other cousins and stuff. And she's like, we'll never be able to afford a house there. We'll never be able to, you know, the answer is we'll never, never, never. And I'm like, well, stop. If this is meant for you and you should be here, you need to put in some work and give it gratitude. Be like, I can't wait for when we move into our dream home and just take little pieces of money. You know, start with, can I put $1 a day in a jar? And then when you can get to, let's say $100, can you put $10 a week in that jar? And when you get to $500, put it into an account just specifically to grow for your dream home. And just the whole way, they're like, this is so exciting. I could see us fixing the roof. I could see us building that extra bed. You know, it's just whatever it is, you know, you'd be amazed at how energy around you, the universe, the Holy Spirit, everybody has a different word for it. I say Holy Spirit, the way it's like, yes, you do deserve it and you want it and you're putting in the work. And you'd be surprised at, hey, you know what? This house belongs to you. And, you know, there's this great loan or hey, somebody gives it to you. You never know.
You never know.
Yeah, it's just throwing the gratitude into it and just doing the little seeds that you have, because God knows what you have. But if you're putting the effort into, I'm doing everything I can to put in the work that I can, and I have to leave it to God to do the rest, because he gave me this dream. So he wants me to have it. And this is all I can do that I know to make it work. And it's amazing how it just flourishes and snowballs and happens.
Right. And it does kind of begin with our thoughts, you know, because like, to your point, if we're telling ourselves, oh, I'll never be able to do X, I'll never be able, you know, I can't do that, whatever, are we even looking for how we could do it? We're not. So now, when you use the term dream, how do you define dream?
Well, there's so many scientific definitions that I'm not going to get into, but I think that it's very important to look at it and what it is, because some people say, oh, well, I had this fantasy about something and that means I want it to happen. Okay, well, you could start there. And then there's the dreams where you go to sleep at night and you're like, wake up and you're like, that felt real, or I saw something and I want to know more. So in your dream state, like your sleeping state in different parts of REM, I mean, there is different levels of where a dream is. Some is just your mind moving and, you know, you're just remembering little pieces and thoughts, which could be very important. Then we have the popular dreams of, oh my gosh, I was flying, or I can't scream, or yeah, I can't move. So those are important too. So, and then there's ones that are more like apparitions when you're alive and you're like, did that happen? Is that deja vu, or those sort of dreams? And people call it all different things. And there's a few different states in between too. Like some people call it the vortex. Some people call it living in the oracle, I think. And all of them have a meaning. So say it's a fantasy of, oh, you know, I think most of them relationships really, or everybody could say they've had a relationship fantasy, right? So it's like, oh my gosh, I saw my dream man across the street. And oh, I could just vision myself in the white picket fence and all of that, right? And it's like, okay, you have a choice here of, are you married and looking to get married? Or are you in a relationship and it's not working? Are you looking to get out? Or are you looking to repair the relationship? You know, you're whatever phase you're in, you have to look at it. It's not necessarily that person across the street. That fantasy triggered a change of maybe it's time for me to move. And it could be a good, you know, do you see yourself going in a bad direction and you're trying to get out? Or, you know, you're trying to get something that you've had on your heart and that person triggered it. It could be an item. It could be so many things.
Okay.
So, you know, when you should write it down. You should keep a dream journal of, okay, I saw this man across the street. He was very attractive and I could totally see myself having a life with him, but you know nothing about him, right? So now you have the choice to just keep running with the dream. Like, oh my gosh, he's a banker. Oh my gosh, he has a house in the Hamptons. You know, it's like, you know, you don't know anything about this guy, but you now are building further on your fantasy. Is that your part of what's in your heart? Is that part of your dream? Right. So if you're building it, what does it mean? And then when you go to sleep, you could say, I really would like to explore this further. I saw this guy today. I had a little fantasy about it. You're telling yourself, in my dream state, can you help me figure it out?
Wow.
Yeah. You can condition what you dream about at night. Like, I would like to figure out this problem at work. I would like to learn more about my relationship. I had this fantasy and that guy looked fine. I really want to know what that's all about. I mean, if you do it every night, you'll get pieces. And so it could be go to the dream where you can't scream because you feel it could be an answer of, you feel trapped to where you are, but you would like to get out. And it could be your job. It could be your relationship. It could be a family situation. It could be a financial situation. It could be so many things. You could be trapping yourself. So if you're asking when you go to sleep, I would like to explore this further, you know, that helps you get some answers. But you have to learn how to interpret too. So you have to take all the pieces of whatever state of a dream you're in. And if you're keeping a journal, you're watching a cycle and you're watching what's going on and you see the hidden pieces of it. So if you see this guy and he's, you know, this answer out, and then all of a sudden the next day you see somebody else, like there's something manifesting around you of you're supposed to meet somebody else, or maybe there's something you're going to meet in somebody that's going to help your current relationship, or, you know, maybe you're open for a new promotion. So you have to look at where your life is and what is presenting yourself to you and what's speaking loud. It may not necessarily be that exact person, but it's something that triggered you seeing that person that gave you a whole bunch of answers.
Yeah. So Debbie, when you use the word dream, you're not saying like, oh, I'm dreaming of like a big goal. You're really meaning your dreams that you have, like when you're sleeping type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a whole cycle system of a dream. Like, it's not a coincidence to have a dream. It's not a coincidence to bump into somebody. It's not a coincidence to almost get hit by a cab on your way to
work.
That's
right.
So you have to look at a dream is when you're sleeping and you're in a dream, it's a place of your mind and the energy around you working together, but you're not, you always are trying to control when you're awake. You're always trying to control what's going on and you're feeding yourself thought. It's sort of like you put that to sleep and you let everything else work and you sort of get like a YouTube short at the end. You wake up, you're like, wait, what happened? That felt like 7 years of a dream. And you're like, wake up, you get a 35 second short of it.
You're like, wait a minute, what? But you know what, Debbie, this is fascinating. This was, oh my God, this would have been the early 90s. So what you're saying here really resonates. I am the first in my family to go to college. I am the only sister that didn't have kids. I didn't follow the traditional path that the rest of my family did. And I used to have this dream, and it was a recurring nightmare that happened maybe once a week. And it started in the early 90s. And it was always, you know, I was in the house by myself, and I'd come upon this closet, or I don't know if it was a closet or a bathroom, but it was a small room. And I knew the door had been closed, but now it was open. And I knew someone was on the other side of that door, and I was terrified. And I'd be like, get out. I'd be trying to yell, get out, whatever. And it was someone that I knew at the time. I was telling her about it. And it's funny because we really were not close friends. But she said to me, she's like, Bobby, I just wonder. She said, you know, you have a different path for yourself. And she said, I know. And my family didn't really support that path, you know, and there was a lot of conflict around it. And she said, I wonder if it's like your mind working on how your family feels about this. And she said, you know, maybe the next time when you have that dream, tell yourself before you go to sleep, open the door and see who's there. And at the time I thought, well, that's a bunch of nonsense. But I tried it. It was very powerful. And then I opened the door, and it was like just people who didn't support my journey. And now maybe that was power suggestion. I don't know, but I never had the dream again after that.
Yeah. You have control. Yeah.
You know, so it's fascinating how we can, I guess, program it that way. So this is what you work with people on, like helping them have these dream journals and stuff.
Yeah. It's a huge piece of it because most people think that they've already passed their dream. Like, oh, you know, exactly. I didn't follow the path that my family fell into. So forget it. Like, I'm ruined. You know, I didn't do this. Oh, I was supposed to have kids at this age and I didn't do it. I was supposed to go to law school, but I didn't do it. My time has passed. No, it's not. Your time frame is your time frame. You can't be judged or compared to someone else because you weren't brought here to be somebody else. You were brought here to be you. So dream interpretation is really important. Of if you think your time has passed for you, it hasn't. It always evolves into something else. You always have a new dream. You always have an evolution of what your dream was. And if there was something you felt strongly about as a kid of, I really, really, really feel I need to have this or I want this, and it hasn't happened yet, that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Only you're putting this time frame to yourself. Mm. And, you know, so digging in really deep of what your dreams look like helps you feel like, wow, wait, I am still alive. I still have ambitions.
Yeah.
Still have things I want to do, and I can do it. And, you know, the famous story that I tell that keeps coming up is a gentleman, you know, in his later 50s, early 60s, that's like, I want to be a major league ball player, but I've never played baseball before, never been on a team. You know, I don't know a lot about the game, but that's what I want to do. And of course, we're all going to look at this person and go, no, that's ridiculous, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's part of dream crushing, right? So he's probably been told this since he was in his early 20s of no, you can't. And that is the most debilitating thing, is just automatically dismissing somebody. And we all do it, right? We all do it. Our family is number one to do that to us. And a lot of it is out of love and just reaction. It's also out of that person's own fears. But instead of saying no, why don't we say, okay, well, let's walk through this. Let's look at this. You've had this dream since you were a little kid and you see yourself. Okay, so what do you see? You see yourself running bases. Maybe it's a home run. Maybe it's the fame. It's the traveling. You love the excitement of a sport. Maybe it's just the quick hits of I'm doing this for 4 or 5 hours, like 4 or 5 days a week. We go to a new city. That's exciting. Working on a team. So let's look at all of these things and let's look at what excites you. You know, it turns out it's, I love the quick hits. I love the recognition of it. I love being on a team. I love the excitement of meeting new people. I just love all these things of the sports aspect of we're all in the same colors. We're all in the same goal. We're making excitement for people. So being able to get this guy into a really high profile, exciting project management job where you have the quick hits. It's excitement every day. It's working on a team. You're building a product that's going to get out there and help people. And you get to travel and you get to go to trade shows. And you if you're looking at the whole thing, you're getting your base hits. You're getting your recognition. Mm. You're wearing the team colors. And you have that excitement of what you saw as being a major league ball player, because all you knew was growing up and watching it on TV, because that's what your dad and your grandfather and your brothers did. And you saw that love. So, you know, if you really look at what that dream looked at for somebody, dissecting it deeper, he found a job that he's like, this really is fulfilling for me. And I love it. And I can come home and I can be happy and I can talk about it and have excitement. And so it's bringing that home, fixing the relationship that he had with his wife, because he was always missing something and it was always changing careers because he didn't like where he was. And now finally he's in a place where he's like, I love what I do. I'm happy. And he can come home and it's relaxed. And his wife is like, you're a different person. And this is the person I wanted. I married. This is the person I want to spend the rest of my life with.
Yeah.
And so you have to look at, people only could see what they know. And especially when you're young, how much do you really know? So you see a vision and that, but you got to look all around what that vision looks like and all the energy that's around it and what he really saw and wanted. And all he saw was being a major league ball player.
Yeah.
So, wow. You know, it's just unveil, like just taking the layers off of it.
Yeah.
And looking at it at a different place. And so when you're really working on the well-rounded dream, you have to do some dissection, and it's not easy to do it for yourself.
No.
You know, sometimes somebody outside needs to be able to look at you and be able to go into these layers. And I do have a layer of clairvoyance that is very helpful, because I could see certain things of a person and, you know, try to piece things together for you.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to ask you this, because now you were a COO at one point, right?
Yes.
How did you, that's very different than what you're talking about here, right? Because this is, I mean, really, but, yeah. But I love how you're talking about it, right? It's like, because we probably can't put those pieces together for ourselves, you know, like your example about the man and the major league baseball player, but to keep going down those layers, you know, how did you move into this?
Well, I had a huge faith, and I did know that my faith was a different, had more, I guess clairvoyance is the best way I could do it. I knew that I was seeing more than other people, and that took a long time. I realized that I was making choices as being younger, and I would say, way in probably to my late 30s, early 40s, of making choices of, well, nobody else can see this, so I must be wrong. Like my what I'm visioning must be wrong, because everyone's like, no, like, oh, that, yeah, you're just mid-level, you know, move up a little more, it'll be great, you know. And I'm like, but it's not.
Yeah.
But there was no body around me at that time, until I think like maybe my very early 40s, I met somebody that could see an answer without me telling her all of this. She said to me, like, you see the world differently. Like, I can see what I could see scares people, but I have a lot of signs and symbols. Like, I could see faces and I could see visions and I could see by layer of protection from God, you know, and I could see these things and people don't. Like, that's just, I mean, you have the ability to do it and the ability to see it, but you probably don't see what I see, but you do see things. Like, you see a penny sometimes, or, you know, you see a feather sometimes, or you see a rainbow, or when you're looking at clouds, you're like, hey, do you see, it looks like an elephant. Oh my gosh, now it looks like a bunny. You know, you do see these things. So once you learn how to focus on that and learn how to take it deeper and learn some tricks of getting deeper, you start to see it. But I didn't have anybody anywhere that really saw what I was seeing. And so I was listening to the world and trying to put myself into, you know, who I am behind a closed door. And when I, you know, go to pray to God is one person, but when I'm in the world, I have to be somebody else, you know? Right. And so I think that that was also a confusion in my life of I was two people, but I was miserable being in the real world because I wasn't being who I was, where I wanted to be like, God's here. He's all around us. Don't you see it? He wants, and I see all these cheerleaders that are like, I want the best for you. Life is going to be amazing. And, you know, you go into the regular world and it's doom and gloom. And if, you know, I felt like if I was having this conversation with somebody at work, I was going straight to a straitjacket.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I learned to shut it off. And then I was getting a lot of signs and symbols, and I was afraid if I stayed in that world, I was going to self-destruct myself and I wasn't going to be here in 6 months. And I just, you know, at the same time of listening to God, I also was like, why am I not talking about God in my everyday life? And why am I not being true to what he's giving me?
Yeah.
So one great story was when I, you know, the choice was to leave the last job I was in, there was a construction going on and I actually had to move my office to like this insane remote corner of the building where there was only a few people. And I really enjoyed those people. We were working on a project anyway, so it made sense for me to be sitting with them. And it was always like, who's the last person to leave to make sure, you know, you lock the door kind of a thing. And I left early one day. I was like, listen, I'm running this program at my church and I have to leave early because I can't get stuck in the traffic. It was taking me over 2 hours to get home.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh, okay. And the next day I got there and there was four guys standing there waiting for me. I was scared out of, I was like, I love you guys. What's going on? Why are you all standing there waiting for me? And they're like, when you said you had to leave for something about your church, so much, and every guy was like, I was up all night, and every guy had a different story. They didn't talk to each other. They when they got to work, they all started talking, and I got there and they're like, I have to talk to you. Oh my God. And I want to go back to church. And I have all these visions, and like all these things were pouring out of them of excitement of like, they felt something that happened to them. And it was like, this is what I really want to do. And this, you know, all these dreams and all these spiritual revelations were coming out and they had excitement in them. And I was like, all I needed to do was be true to myself and talk about who I really am and my relationship with God. And look at how this is growing, these people. And they were so excited about it. And they wanted to know more about the program that I was running. And the whole day just ended up being us sitting around just talking about this. And, you know, I think like two of them ended up pretty closely going into a new job and a new place. And some of them repaired their relationships. I knew that. And one guy had been an atheist since he was really young. And he's just like, you know, I've been getting some weird things happening to me. And he's like, now I think it's God trying to talk to me. And he got, you know, so it's when you change yourself to be positive and when you change yourself to your true calling, you just have to show it. And it's contagious of like what's done for people and what you know, just having that initial conversation of like, I'm doing this, this is my life, this is who I am, I'm done with hiding it.
It's changed. It completely changes it, you know, and I heard this years ago. One of the reasons that it's so important for us to be authentic and true to ourselves is that when we do that, when we are authentic, we give permission to everyone around us to also be authentic. And I think that's the power of it. And I want to make sure I wanted to ask you about this too. I know that you mentioned you have several books and also the Dream Pollination Program. So do you want to tell us just a little bit about those and how someone could learn more too, if they're interested?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah. So the Dream Pollination Program is a one-on-one program identifying what your true potential is, what is on your heart, finding your soul mission of being here, getting yourself into really good relationships, getting yourself into your dream career, putting your finances in order, getting your health in order. I also do work with companies to empower your employees, do culture changes for the positive, let them really show what the company does have to offer and not have them go fishing for it because they usually don't know where to find it or that it really exists. And, you know, build that program for individuals. And that's part of the Dream Manager program. I do have 3 books that I have written. They're all fiction novels, and they all are based on wild, crazy stories about following your heart and that you're always loved and you're always supported and guided. And if you believe, it will happen.
Nice. Nice. And now, where can someone learn more about you?
Yes, I try to make it as simple as possible. So my website is debbycruz.com, which is DEBBYKRUSZ.com. My social media, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook are all the same handle at DebbyCruz, DEBBYKRUSZ.
Nice, nice. And I'll put those in the show notes as well. This has been terrific. And so, Debbie, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time and for joining us. And for you listeners, I hope that you check out Debbie's website and her programs.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Bobby. And I really appreciate being here.
I hope that you found that conversation interesting. I know that I did. And I ended up writing down a lot of statements that Debbie made as they really resonated with me. So here they are. Number one, I mean, obviously, when she said that it's not that I don't want to be in this job, it's that this job is making me not want to be in this life, that hit me hard. I think that many people have found themselves in that boat, or at least a similar boat. And life is too short and it's too precious to tolerate that. Number two, the negative is the easy breeder. That's just unfortunately truth. I don't think I need to say another thing about it. That's just the truth. Number three, are you putting the work in for your dreams? And now confession time. Initially, when Debbie was talking about her client who wanted a vacation home, and Debbie was talking about, you know, putting a dollar a day in the jar towards that, I thought, man, that's going to take a long time. However, as I was listening back to the conversation during post-production, I realized what she was really saying. When we show up for our dreams, and when we put the work in for our dreams, even in very small ways, that's when our dreams show up for us. Number four, your time frame is your time frame. Stop putting false pressure on it. And finally, number five, you were not brought here to be anyone else. You were brought here to be you. 5 powerful statements, and I know that there were more, but those were the 5 that I captured. So shifting gears a little bit, I want to take a minute to thank you, the listener. We would not be here without you. We would not have made it to episode 169. I mean, I cannot believe that we are approaching 200 episodes. And I just want to say thank you for all the support that you show us. Just when I need it most, you know, just when I feel that little bit of discouragement, I receive a note from one of you telling me how the show has helped you. And I really appreciate that way more than you know. You help me to keep going. And if you haven't done so already, if you'd be so kind as to leave us a rating and a review, that would be awesome. It helps more people find us. So I hope that you have an amazing week and that you thrive no matter what.